Hello, and welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling Book Club. I'm your host, Jennifer Eden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
If it sounds like we're in some kind of metallic tunnel, you're correct. We're recording in the past on my laptop microphone.
Shouting to you down the lines of time.
I mean, we've had a lot of really dumb sound problems in our time, but I think this might be the dumbest. And the most mysterious because, you know, for those of you who don't know, and I guess we're going to have to explain this again at the start of the regular episode, but for those of you who don't know, you know, I bring everything in a bag from my apartment to Bridget's office every time we record. The microphones live in that bag.
Yeah.
And they never leave it. And somehow I am missing the crucial cord that connects... that connects the sort of, like, receiver to my computer, and we have no idea where it is. It is not in Bridget's office. It is not in my bag.
So... we decided to go ahead and record this in a tinny fashion.
Because it's been so fucking long.
We thought you deserved something that was imperfect and tinny rather than nothing at all.
Well, so the sound's going to be garbage, but we said that so you can't complain about it.
Right.
And if we sound a little punchy, it's because it's been a long day.
It's a Friday evening, we've had long weeks, long days.
And only I'm drinking, because Bridget gave it up for Lent.
Yep, yeah, so.
Which she is now regretting.
I'm regretting it so much. I've started this Lent off badly. We're 3 days in, and I've had 3 days of normal drinking activities scheduled.
At which you have not been drinking.
At which I have not been drinking.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
But I am, so. But let's talk about the Vore game.
Let's talk about the Vore game.
So, I was on record as, like, super hating Warrior's Apprentice, and I'm not gonna lie, I still have not finished Warrior's Apprentice. I tried to go back, and I was like, nope, I still find this insufferable.
But you felt very differently about the Vore game.
I felt very differently about the Vore game. I really liked the Vore game, actually, because I felt like all the things that I sort of dislike about Miles were still there, but... in a much more human way.
Yeah.
Like, he was still very much like, I'm very good at things, but he was also realizing that, like, his limits are sort of, like, where other people begin.
Yes.
You know? Like he can be really good at something, and he can be really smart and think 5 steps ahead, but he can't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had sort of, like, more of a, like, an idea of, like, actions have consequences, which I appreciated.
He had a sense of fallibility. Which he didn't really...
Yeah, and it wasn't, like, tragic fallibility or, like...
No.
Because this one, you know, activity didn't, you know, work, I am clearly garbage. Like, no, he was actually, like...
Like, oh, no, I fucked up there.
Okay. I fucked up there, yeah.
How can I fix this? I gotta do something to fix this.
And also, it may be very possible that I can't fix this, which I thought was nice. You know, there was no acknowledgement, as far as I got, which admittedly was not there very far in Warrior's Apprentice, that, like... You know, it was very, that the possibility of failure didn't exist for him, so.
Mm, yeah, I do have, first of all, I definitely thought that the entire book was going to take place in, like, the weird
Camp
Arctic.
Camp Permafrost, which I love.
It was so great. And as soon as he found the dead soldier, I was like, oh, the Vore game is something that, like, they do to each other.
It's a cool game it's you like, play when you got nothing else to do.
I thought it was, like, a hazing thing and that people were going to be dying from it and this is what he was going to have to do. He's like, solve this. I was disproved about 30 pages later when we were suddenly in space.
I know, I was like, ooh, a murder!
It was not a murder. And then we left Camp Permafrost and went to space.
But then Camp Permafrost had, like, repercussions,
it did.
Which, you know.
It came back around. I, for about half the book, I was like, that was a weird thing to do right there. That was a weird plotting choice. I'm not sure where this is going. But it's also, like, she's proven herself to be a very adept plotter. I'm sure this is not just, like, a weird...
Yeah, we need to make sure we're leaning forward.
Yes.
maybe start that point again, just in case. I mean, we're literally, like, crouched over my laptop. I don't think that I can really give you an accurate, you know, description of how, like, unwieldy this is.
Our posture is just terrible.
Yeah.
So, what was my point?
You were talking about how she's an adept plotter
how... So, like, for about half the book, or about halfway through the book, I was like, this is... going very weirdly, like, we were, you know, okay, so he's suddenly sent to Camp Permafrost, and then he's suddenly sent to space, and things are sort of going out of nowhere, and I have no idea what's happening, but, like, and this is just a weird plotting choice. I don't, like, this doesn't make any sense. And then I stopped myself and I was like, okay, so we've read, what, 4 books by her by now? She is not a random plotter. She doesn't just throw things in for no reason. She's very not like,
oh no, I've written him into a corner on Camp Permafrost and now I need to get him out of it.
Yeah.
Like, I actually have a plan.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, you gotta trust her. And it did all come back around.
Oh my god, when what was the evil Camp Permafrost CEO?
Oh, I don't know anyone's names.
Marstov?
I barely remember Miles.
So evil Camp Permafrost guy, when he showed up again, I was like, oh, I had forgotten about him.
Oh, he's super crazy.
He's super crazy. And then the fact that he had like apprenticed himself to someone crazier than he was.
I was like, I traditionally really like sort of villainous women who are like really powerful, but it's like also she just is dangerously so.
And like
she does not have she has like 8 plans, but all of them are insane.
And I really love all the points where Miles was like, I really should be turned on right now, but I'm so disturbed that I'm really not. Like, this is the shortest woman I've ever met, and I'm so turned off. I just don't know how to deal with it. And I also thought that this felt like, I mean, I think that once I'm done with the series, I'm going to go back and give Warrior's Apprentice, like, another crack. Like,
once
now that you like
Miles?
Now that I like him a little more, I mean, I'm still going to try and power through, but, you know, I think that this felt a lot like a return to sort of the things I loved about Shards of Honor and Barrier, that it was like, this is sort of the consequences of having this kind of society. Like, this is, like, I'm reaping the consequences of being born into this kind of civilization, and you know, being the kind of person that I am. And I also thought that it dealt, like, the way that he sort of, the way that she sort of wrote his disabilities felt more, like, lived in to me in this book. Because the one, I mean, I think that where it sort of started going wrong for me was in that very first chapter of Warrior's Apprentice, where he was like, I know that this person's purposefully trying to goad me, but, and I also know that if I try and leap over this wall, I'm going to immediately die, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you've been talking about how much of a great reader of people you are for like 10 pages. And the fact that you fell for this is embarrassing for you and annoying for me.
Yeah, that's fair. And, interestingly, this book also starts with him being, you know, sent back on his heels.
Speak directly to the computer, not to me.
Okay. I know. Close to
But like, see how the line goes away.
Yeah. this book also started with him being sort of sent back on his heels, where he has, like, expectations. He sort of is like, I'm going to do this thing. I can do this thing. And then they're like, no, actually, we're going to do something else entirely.
You're going to do a thing, but...
Nope. Can't say you're going to like it. so that was an interesting... that may be part of what you liked better, is that the way he responded to this was much more mature.
Yeah. No, and it felt more... I mean, it definitely felt more mature. I mean, maybe what I was responding to was just his youth in the first one. Because he definitely, you know...
Youths.
Yeah, youths. Yeah. But I did go on Wikipedia and, like, read the plot spoilers for it. I was like, man, some shit happened in Warriors.
Yeah. I was trying to tell you.
Damn, Bathory. I'm not sure if you needed that end, but okay. So, yeah, and I think, you know, I think the only drawback is something that you pointed out, where you were like, I'm not entirely sure I remember who everyone is or what was happening.
Yeah, there were definitely points where I was like, I'm not really sure what's happening here. It doesn't help that everyone's name starts with Vor, and I'm like, who the hell is this guy?
Well, actually, I thought that there are fewer Vors in this one.
That's
because
true.
There's Vor Kosigan, and then there's Gregor, who's like, I'm just Greg.
Sure,
just call me Greg. It's like, okay, Your Highness Greg. Like, fine, whatever. Like, is there not a less kingly name than Greg? Maybe, like, Stu or something. Like, I am Chad, your king. Like, Greg.
I did like the way that... I liked his arc. Especially in as much that you only see part of it, because you only see it through Miles' eyes. But I liked the sense that this was partly just, like... youthful rebellion and partly like really deep-seated depression. And so it's something that sort of seems like a whimsical, youthful, just like,
yeah, I'm off to see the wizard. Yeah,
it's like, actually, no, he kind of did want to die a little bit.
Like, all those moments when Miles is like, I'm just going to carefully not think about the part where he threw himself off the balcony. And, yeah. Yeah. Maybe you should talk to someone about that, Emperor Vorbara. Like, maybe you should talk to someone about that feeling you've been having. And the part where he was, like, trying to put a brave face on, like, you know, it was actually fine. Like, the fact that I got captured, like, it's fine. It was actually just part of the adventure. You're just like, I don't even know if you understand how deeply you're fucked up right now. Yes. And Miles is like, why am I being the responsible one?
I'm supposed to be the adventurer. I liked seeing how all of the pieces sort of came back into play. And, like, part of this is just watching everyone sort of slowly, like, see Gregor and be like, this is serious. Okay.
Oh, shit. And, like, that whole time where, you know, Miles is away from, Cavillo, Cavi, as Gregor calls her, the whole time that he's away from her ship, and he's like, what the fuck is happening? Is Gregor in love with this crazy person? Is he dead? I don't know. What's happening? I have no idea. I'm proceeding as if Gregor is alive, but I don't know.
Yes. We have to assume he's, like, remained himself, because otherwise we have no plan.
Oh my god, and it was so heartbreaking when he was like, I just wish she was real. And you're like, oh. Poor Emperor. Like, bless your heart. I just realized
I need to find him a nice Baton woman so that...
Right? Someone with a spine? Yeah. I realized I got my charger out and then did not actually charge my phone.
Hold, please.
Oh, I don't know why I got up. It's right here. Shambles. I'm in shambles. There was a passage I highlighted because it sort of brought me back to, like, you know, those conversations about honor that I just, like, lost my shit about. it was you texting me. I need to put weather somewhere other than next to the photos because I keep looking by accident. So I forget where it is in the book, but it was when he's back together with Elena, like he and Gregor and Elena are kind of back together and they're talking about sort of like what to do and they're talking about war. And Gregor says, strange, said Gregor, looking at Elena, at the new Elena, Miles' guest, to think you've had more combat experience than either of us. Than both of you, Elena corrected dryly. Yes, well, actual combat is a lot stupider than I'd imagined. If two groups can cooperate to the incredible extent it takes to meet in battle, why not put in a tenth that effort to talk? That's not true of guerrilla wars, though, Elena went on thoughtfully. A guerrilla is an enemy who won't play the game. Makes more sense to me. If you're going to be vile, why not be totally vile? That third contract. If I ever get involved in another guerrilla war, I want it to be on the side of the guerrillas. Harder to make peace between totally vile enemies, Miles reflected. War is not its own end, except in some catastrophic slide into absolute damnation. It's peace you want that's wanted. Some better peace than the one you started with. Mm. And I was like, oh, Level 6 Master Bujold! Oh, putting us on blast like this! But yeah, I mean, overall, I really, really like this one. And if this is the direction that the series is moving, I can understand why people just really love these books now. Like, The Warrior's Apprentice honestly feels like some kind of strange dream to me because it feels so different from this one.
This one, it's got a lot more of that sort of, a lot of the previous books felt a little bit like pinball. Mm-hmm. You're sort of bouncing around and it's a little gleeful, even as, like, bad things are happening. You get a real sense of joy from the way the story unfolds and the writing and all of that. And I think Warrior's Apprentice felt less like that in some way that I can't quite put my finger on.
Because it was a 17-year-old discovering consequences.
Yeah.
Whereas the others were like adults who were like, yes, everything is garbage, but I found love!
So, yeah. This one brought that back, even though a lot of it was actually like setting up dominoes.
Mm-hmm.
That had to fall in a very specific way.
Well, yeah, and you know, and normally I sort of, one of the tough things about, you know, having a protagonist who's like, you know who I'm smarter than? Everyone, including you. Like, I can find that very insufferable because I'm just like, okay, you're just being obtuse. Like, you're not being intelligent. You're just being, like, you're just keeping things from me, and I don't like
yes.
it. But it didn't feel that as much in this one.
This is why the one thing that I find protagonists who don't know the truth very compelling, and I find protagonists who are withholding the truth from the reader really insufferable.
I know you have those feelings.
So the fact that there's this whole stretch here where he doesn't really know if Gregor is turned or dead or whatnot. Yeah. He really just has to trust that. And so you, the reader, have to go along with that. And he keeps coming back to the fact that he doesn't know if this is going to work. It all hinges on this one thing that he doesn't know.
And I like that he kind of reflects on, okay, these are the things I know, and even those things are not helpful to me.
Yeah.
Because they do not shed any light on the things that I don't know, and the things that I don't know are bigger than the things I know.
Yeah.
Bigger and more dangerous. So I really, I agree with you. I think that that's really, was very well done.
Yes.
Not that she needs our praise at this point, but like...
I know. Good job.
Good job, Lois. I appreciate it. Yeah. So what the hell is Setaganda about? Do we know? I'm assuming that it's...
to do with the war that we just had?
Well, the five-day war that we just had, yeah. So as things stand at the end of the book, Setaganda has been like, oh, shame on you, people we definitely did not tell to start that war.
We were completely out of that
loop. Please come back for your official chastisement. So they're sort of in, you know, off in their area. Jackson's hole is still just there, I guess.
Yeah.
Because they weren't really involved, other than they were going to be a fence for whatever she stole from Vervain, which I definitely thought was like an herb, but...
It is, but I think... yeah, this was something that I found very hard to keep track of. I felt like I needed a chart of who was loyal to who.
Well, you remember at the beginning...
Yes.
Where he was like, helpfully, like, tell me about...
Let us visualize this in three-dimensional holograms.
Oh my god, and he's like, helpfully highlighting each part. And I'm just like, I'm gonna murder someone. Like, what the fuck is happening right now?
It's like, I'm not going to remember any of this. I never remember any of this. Like, you need to refresh that rather than just laying it all out. Yeah. Right, because none of this, I have no context for any of it.
I'm not, you know, the wizard of Vorkosiga or whatever. Like, I don't remember this shit. So.
And it's like, I'm hearing three different planets' names for the first time. So you're expecting me to remember those planets, what they are, their relationships with each other. Because, like, Miles is sitting there, he knows what all those places are. It's like, you know, having us trying to figure out whether France and Germany are allies or not. Like, I know what that means. I know I have context for that statement. But, like, I say to Ganda and Jackson's Hole, I'm like, are we in Wyoming?
And Paul? Paul? P-O-L?
So I struggled with that a lot. Partly because these books don't... typically demand that you, you know, create, like, a genealogy chart.
Yeah.
And so suddenly I needed one. I was like, I guess I'm just gonna fly blind through this. It's exciting anyway.
Well, pardon me. There were some moments where I was, like, genuinely concerned. I was just like, I genuinely don't think that Miles is gonna get out of that. And I think that I didn't have that in Warrior's Apprentice because there was a sense of him just being able to, like, call Dad and, like, Dad can rescue me.
Yeah.
But, like, in this, he was very much like, I cannot call anyone. Like, there is no one. I am the only person out here that can actually do anything.
Yeah.
And at the end, when he got his little lieutenant stripes, I was like, oh, yay! It's symbolic, but great!
I really loved the moment where Gregor appeared when they, like, made contact again. And you can see just, like, as soon as the two of them make eye contact, it's like... Oh,
we're
God.
Fine.
Okay.
Oh, my God. And they're, like, looking at each other and being like... And then the moment...
Like, and we're just going to silent... I really love when characters know each other so well that they can, like, silently do things and, like, we're just gonna... Okay. So I'm going to give you some, like, minor clue. You're going to do the thing that makes my plan work and we're all gonna be fine.
Well, and the moment when she's like... How were you able to lie so convincingly? And Gregor's like, you don't know anything about my planet. You don't know how many people have tried to fucking kill me since I was, like, 6 years old.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is wrong with you, you dumb bitch? And she was so dumb. I was like, your plan is to marry Gregor? That's your big plan? Like, you learned all the wrong lessons from everything.
Everything anyone said to you.
Oh, my God. So Vorgame, A+.
Yes.
Really enjoyed it.
Really enjoyed that. Although, I still don't know what the title means. But this is also what happened with Warrior's Apprentice. I still don't know what that title means.
Who's the apprentice to? We may never know.
I don't know.
Well, I think it's, you know, the Vorgame, for me, was, like, sort of him trying to deal with, okay, so I am still technically Ensign Vorkosigan. Mm. Like, I am still technically part of the Imperial service or whatever. Like, what does that mean to me in this situation? You know, because there were moments where he's like, you know, I'm expected to sort of go after my own self-interest, but if I do that, then my friend Gregor is going to definitely die. Yeah. Or like, so to that, it was, so for me, it was sort of like the game of pitting Miles's self-interest against
the Game of Thrones in space.
Game of Thrones in space. So it's like one throne that he doesn't even particularly want.
No.
Like, I love that he was like, oh my God, people might put me for it. Shit, that would be awful. And then at the end when he's like, you know, Gregor doesn't have children, but he does have an heir. Like, oh, so good. Like, smarmy little shit. I love him. Okay, I get it now. I get it now.
We've come around.
Still wish. I was also fucking wish he wouldn't mention that Cordelia isn't gorgeous every time he meets him. I'm like, that's your mom.
Yeah,
stop talking shit about your mom. You bitch.
It's also, like, irrelevant.
Yeah. Alrighty, well.
Let me check, see if we have any questions.
About the Vorkosigan saga. Nope, no questions. I'm sure we probably do from, like, way back, but,
Yeah.
That was in the past. We're looking ahead now. So for next time, we'll read Seta Ganda, and then, do we want to attempt to? Or...
Well, we did not succeed at that this time, so I vote we try for one, and then if we do read two, we can,
announce it before then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or record two episodes and stock up.
Madness. Alrighty. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in to this very delayed episode of the Shipping and Handling Book Club, the Vorkosigan Saga, Game of Thrones in Space, and also bearing with us for the terrible audio quality.
I hope you could hear it.
And if not, well...
Too late.
Alrighty. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
Bye.